Haribol.
So what did we discuss in our previous class? We had a 1 week break. What was there last week?
We discussed Karma Yoga under the banner of...
Which chapter are we?
Chapter.
Of? Good. Called as?
Transcendental
knowledge. So which verse we... Which, from which verse to which verse did we do that?
16 to
16 to 24. Seshadri Prabhu is spot on. Very good. So what did we discuss? What was the theme?
Karma Yoga under the context of Jnana. How do we understand karma? That was one part.
That's what I understood, the difference between akarma, vikarma,
and
action and inaction.
Karma.
Karma. Akarma.
Action
and inaction. Inaction and action. We discuss karma, vikarma, and. No, karma, vikarma, and akarma. So what is the difference between karma, vikarma, and akarma? Who can summarize for us very nicely? Tarun Dhruv, what is the difference between karma, akarma, and akarma?
Karma can be called as when we are trying to do anything for our own sense gratification or not for the pleasure of the Lord, not directed in that sense, so that becomes karma in whatever we do, good or bad.
Are you sure? Anyone else? Half right.
No, yeah. Akarma is performed for whom? It's for Krishna. Akarma is for Krishna, and the attitude in that is there is no desire for servitor or sense of sense gratification, and the result of that is you get transcendental happiness. The way we define is the type of karmas, akarma, vikarma, and karma. Then for whom it is performed, what is the attitude in the karma, karma, and karma, and then what is the result that you get? So vikarma is it is work with attachment to self.
Same as attachment to results.
Yes. Work with attachment to self, and the attitude is in vikarma is against the shastras, and in karma is according to shastras, but following the Vada. And the result of vikarma is bad reactions, and karma is good reactions.
Okay. So in short, vikarma and karma, the center is
self.
The only difference is whether I'm enjoying my senses constitutionally within the realms of the constitution, or I'm enjoying my senses frivolously. That's all. That's the only difference. Common thing between both is my sense gratification. So I and me are in the center. Clear? Whereas in case of akarma, who is in the center?
Krishna.
That's the only difference. Therefore, when an activity is done with Krishna in the center of that activity, then such activity does not beget reaction. I did not say sinful reaction. That depends on whether it is karma or vikarma. If the action is performed within the realms of the constitution, even if we enjoy our senses, then that's fine. We will get the results of it. That is karma. Vikarma is going against the laws of... So what is an example of vikarma? What's an example? If you have understood, what's an example of vikarma? Ashokuru, what is an example of vikarma? What's an example of bad karma? Bad karma is called as vikarma. Good karma is called as karma. And no karma is called as akarma. Good, bad, no. Three words you remember. Good karma is called as karma. Bad karma is called as vikarma. And no karma is called as akarma. So what is an example of vikarma? There are four examples which any devotee can have.
No meat, eating, no medicine.
Thank you very much. All of you are awake. Haribol. Everyone is awake. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Under any circumstances, these four activities are called as vikarma, and the result is only sin. If I take a gun and I go to the border and I kill the soldier who is trying to come into my country, and if I take the gun and I kill a terrorist, if I'm a commando and I'm killing a terrorist, what will I get? I'll get a medal. If I take the same gun and kill my neighbor, what will I get? 302. Correct? You cannot say the activity is same. I used gun there, you people gave medal. I use same gun here, you have put me 302. 302 means Mataji will not know. 302 in India means section 302 means what? Hang, isn't it?
Death. Hang till death.
Hang till death. Yeah? So in one case you are getting a medal because you shot a terrorist. On the other hand, you shoot your neighbor, then you get. So you cannot say the activity is the same. Why I am getting medal in one case and why am I getting punishment in this case. So most of the actions in this world are relative. But there are four activities which are absolutely sin under any circumstance. Under any circumstance, four activities are always sinful. Meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. We can't justify that. Oh, Prabhu, you know how I am from India, you know, I am from Karnataka. You know, therefore, you know, or I am from Konkan. You know, therefore, you know, I am eating meat. What to do? You know, it is our culture. It's our speciality staple diet. No, no. It is a sin. It is a sin. By the laws of Krishna. By the laws of the government, there's nothing. It's okay. Because everyone does that. So it's okay. But from the laws of God, it is a sin. So we have to understand. So such activities are called as weak karma, which will get sinful reaction. Good karma, activities which beget good karma, are activities which are mentioned in the Karma Kanda section. So you do some puja, you do some religious activities in your house, you know, for the well-being of people in your family. Right? You appease the demigods. So many rituals you do in the house. So those are called as good karma. What is the problem in doing good karma?
The results are binding in nature.
Very good. Even if you do good karma in this world, you will have to come back to enjoy the results of good karma. Right? And if you do bad karma, then you go down to the hellish planets. Four bad karmas. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. You have to go down to the hellish planetary system and then evolve after that. Losing the human form of life. Good karma. Enjoy the heavenly planets and come back after some time. But again, you have to come back here. Right? But akarma is constantly engaging in activities for the pleasure of Krishna. Arjuna, what was he doing in the battlefield of Kurukshetra? He was not doing kirtan over there. Right? He was not singing songs over there. What was he doing? He was fighting and killing. Right? Someone says, I don't want to read Bhagavad Gita because it's all about war. Right? Somebody may say like that. But such a person is ignorant. He doesn't know that sometimes war has to be waged. Somebody came and told us that I won't read Bhagavad Gita. This was one of the people in our office, very senior person who I was talking to. I will not read Bhagavad Gita because it's all about war. The only question we asked them was, if someone removes the clothes of your wife in public, what will you do? You will pay obeisances to that fellow? You will say, no, Gandhi, remove my clothes also. Will you say like that? Will you say like that? So he said, no. I said, that is exactly what Lord Krishna did in Kurukshetra. Kill those fellows. Right? What else do you think they deserve? Right? For outraging the modesty of a woman, what do you think they deserve? Then he kept quiet. No answer. That is what was it. So sometimes, some activities, war has to be waged. In fact, even after they did that, Lord Krishna went up to them and said, okay, fine. Let us have a... He went with a peace proposal. But still those fellows were not. They outraged the modesty of a lady. On top of that, they removed all the kingdom. On top of that, when they went for a peace truce, they rejected that. What else do you expect? They wanted war. Pandavas did not want war. Who wanted war? Kauravas wanted war. The demons wanted war. Therefore, the saintly persons have to wage a war. It's like that. So, such activities which are performed for the pleasure of Krishna or under the instruction of the Krishna, neither get good karma nor they get bad karma. Such activities, if we keep on doing in our life, we will not get any karma. And when you don't get any karma, then what happens at the end of lifetime? You get what is called as liberation. So that is akarma, karma and vikarma.
Let's go further.
Text 25. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them. And some of them offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman.
As described above, a person engaged in discharging duties in Krishna consciousness is also called a perfect yogi or a first class mystic. But there are others also who perform similar sacrifices in the worship of demigods, and still others who sacrifice to the Supreme Brahma or the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord. So there are different kinds of sacrifices in terms of different categories. Such different categories of sacrifice by different types of performers only superficially demark varieties of sacrifice. Factually, sacrifice means to satisfy the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is also known as Yajna. All the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed within two primary divisions, namely sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of impersonal Brahman. The demigods are powerful living entities appointed by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance and supervision of all material functions like the heating, watering and lightning of the universe. Those who are interested in material benefits worship the demigods by various sacrifices according to the Vedic rituals. They are called Bhakti or believers in many gods. But others who worship the impersonal feature of the absolute truth and regard the forms of the demigods as temporary, sacrifice their individual selves in the supreme fire and thus end their individual existence by merging into the existence of the supreme. Such impersonalists sacrifice their time in philosophical speculation to understand the transcendental nature of the supreme. In other words, the fruitive workers sacrifice their material possessions for material enjoyment, whereas the impersonalist sacrifices his material designations with a view to merging into the existence of the Supreme. For the impersonalist, the fire altar of sacrifice is the Supreme Brahman, and the offering is the self being consumed by the fire of Brahman. The Krishna consciousness person like Arjuna, however, sacrifices everything for the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus all his material possessions as well as his own self, everything is sacrificed for Krishna. Thus, he is the first class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence.
What are the points here? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Class is over. I should have turned the board other way. Anyway, what do you understand by this?
A question, not a comment. Since merging into the impersonal Brahman and losing your individual existence, how can a soul lose its existence? But, and what is it, merging into the impersonal Brahman? Merging means becoming one which we don't agree with. I could say, not merging, but still individually situated in the impersonal Brahman. That's what it means.
Correct.
Merging means becoming kind of one.
Correct. They think they are merging, but that individual existence is still individual. Just like there are, Prabhupada gives example elsewhere, that there are many fishes in the ocean, right? But still a fish is a fish. Each fish has its own individual identity. Each atomic particle of water has its own individual identity. So individual identity can never be lost. It's a myth to think that individual identity can be lost. No, it doesn't work that. Individual identity is always there.
Is Prabhupada trying to say they are thinking they are merging and
correct,
losing their existence?
Correct. Correct. Yeah, spot on.
The self being consumed by the fire of Brahman. So, what does that consume mean?
It's a metaphorical state, not a literal state. Anything else?
The difference between different performance, ways of worship, topic worship, is in Chinese.
Mayavadis are not mentioned in this, only Brahmavadis are mentioned. Understand that it's the same in this context?
Yes. Brahmavadis.
Brahmavadis and Mayavadis are same in this context, in this particular context.
No. Brahmavadis.
Brahmavadis. Because Mayavadis are not dependent in this example. There is no mention of Mayavadis in this.
Mayavadis, there is no question of merging. No, they say they are already gods. Who to merge? Isn't it? When you say merge with God, that means somebody is God and I am merging with him. But when I say I am God, then what can you do? Then people have to merge into you. Correct? So that is the bogus philosophy. Mayavadi philosophy.
Okay, that's why they are not categorized
as
worshippers. That is why they are not categorized
in the world. They don't deserve to be categorized.
Prabhu, in context with the sacrificing of material possessions, does the Chaturmasya Vrata also come under the same thing?
The Chaturmasya Vrata, yes, it will come under the same thing, and no, it will not come under the same thing. Depends. And activity, again, good question. The context of the previous class is an activity per se cannot be classified in itself as akarma, vikarma or karma. It is a consciousness in which, with which you do the activity. Suppose I wish Chaturmasya. Bhagavan, I am keeping Chaturmasya because now appraisal time is coming in Infosys. I am just hypothetically taking an example. You know, I am fasting, oh my dear Lord, therefore somehow you know that promotion is there, you know, I want to get that chair. Then what does it become? It becomes good karma. Because now you can get the promotion in different ways. You can go and do some politics and get that promotion in office. Okay. Which means you are hurting someone and knocking someone off his chair and then sitting on that chair. So somebody is unhappy with you. So tomorrow what will happen to you? Somebody will knock you off your chair. Okay. What goes around comes around. That's the law of karma. But at least we are not doing that. I'm saying no. I don't want to trouble anyone for my promotion. I'll do one thing. I have a lot of faith in God. So I'm going to do puja at home. And I'm going to fasting I'm going to do. So that I can get promotion in office. So you're following a proper constitutional process for getting an intended result. So therefore it is getting you good karma. However, the third scenario. I'm suffering from so many problems in my life. I have lost my job. I have lost my health. Right? My whole life is topsy-turvy. And then I am doing Chaturmasya. Saying that, my dear Lord, I don't want anything from you. Just give me your bhakti. That's all. Right? Maximum you may say that whatever you want to do with me, my dear Lord, you do with me. It doesn't matter. As long as you are happy, it's fine. Use me as an instrument. Like that. Then that becomes real Chaturmasya. A karma. There is no karma. Why? Because you are doing it for the pleasure of the Lord. You are telling the Lord, I am keeping this Chaturmasya only to make you happy. Like that. Correct? Suppose we buy, you know, suppose, I'll give you an example. Let's say I buy a gift for my father-in-law. Right? I didn't see your shit. Tell me when you're entering the club. I bought the gift. Okay, I'll tell you.
I mean, both sides are laughing.
During our courtship days, I bought one half Horlicks. I bought one Horlicks bottle for my father-in-law. That is because I was not sure whether he'll accept our marriage or not. What do you call that, Anil? Is it good karma, bad karma, or wrong? Which means I'm doing an activity. Okay, now he was very happy when I brought that. But he didn't know what I was up to. Later on he realized, oh, this fellow is like that. Okay, so when we approach the Lord also in that way, then he's not very pleased. But at least he's okay with you saying that at least this fellow has come to me. Chalo, de do isko. Like that. But he's not very happy. Will somebody be happy? Suppose I give you a nice gift. Oh, this is a gift for you on your birthday. By the way, you know, I wanted a loan. Do you have some? Like that, if I come to you, yeah, he has come. He has come for whatever he wanted. Right? Then there is a problem.
If you don't ask for anything and just sacrifice yourself to the God, then that's the supreme.
Yes. There is something higher than not asking for anything. Not asking for anything is okay. But genuinely seeking that the Lord should be happy is one level above not asking the Lord for anything. Suppose, let's say, Yamuna Jeevan Prabhu has got children. So suppose I, for his boy, I give gift. Oh, happy birthday, and I give gift. And I tell him, I don't want anything from you. Like that I tell him. So fine, that's one way of telling him. He'll say, yeah, Jagannath Ram doesn't want anything from me. But then I say, I bought a gift, you know. I always wanted to see a smile on the face of your son. Then I want something. But still that makes him even more happy. So therefore, when you keep Chaturmas, one is, oh Lord, I don't want anything. That's one thing. Another thing, Lord, I'm doing it. I want you to be happy. Just for your pleasure, I'm doing it like that. And you may undergo so many things in your life. Everything is topsy-turvy in your life. Right? But still you're doing it for, you're not thinking where my life is right now. You're only thinking pleasure of Krishna. Like that. Then you do that, then it becomes a karma. There is no reaction. Sorry, whose question was it, by the way? Your own question. I thought I was asking. Anything else?
I have one question. It's like, Lord is like our father. Only to the father we can ask whatever we want, immaterial of being a materialistic thing or not, isn't it? That kind of intimacy when we develop, so we say that, Dad, you are my dad, you just have to give me, you have to bless me. But how do you actually relate that to whatever you are telling me?
Okay. So, with dad we can ask, with our father we ask. Okay. But with our father, what do we have by default?
Love and affection.
With Krishna, we don't have that. That's the problem. That's the only difference. If we actually see him as a father, you can go and ask him. You can go and shout at him also. What is it? I told you 10 times, you're not giving. Right? Actually, you can do. But that is a higher mood. That is a very high mood. Different mood. Where you're genuinely. But you are also very. Anything that happens in the life of Krishna, you are always tuned to that, always. For example, are we not always tuned to what's happening in our father's life? Most of us are. Right? We are tuned to it. But are we always thinking, even while in office, are we thinking, what will Krishna be doing right now? Has he eaten? How many times do you think? Okay. So, when it comes to giving, we are not thinking him as a father. Only when it comes to receiving him, we are thinking him as a father. So, that is not the real relationship. Father means the same relationship should be there. Same intensity we have for our material father, many more times we should have for the Supreme Father. But that is the process of Krishna consciousness. Now, that mood is not to be cultivated. It's already there. By chanting process, that mood will come out automatically. All the dirt, when it goes away, that natural love will be there. Because all of us have a natural constitutional rush with the Lord. It's already there. You don't have to bring it from outside. You don't have to go to the market and say, kidhar milta hai bhai. No, you don't have to do that. By the process of chanting, the dirt is covering that relationship. So, The chanting process is clearing up the dirt inside our heart. And once you reach a particular stage, typically we did a seminar on Raganuga Bhakti recently with Kesha Prabhu. Kesha Prabhu told us that when you reach the platform of Nishtha, at that time then that natural love starts manifesting within the heart. Nishtha means what? What are the different stages in Bhakti? The first stage is what? Shraddha. Having faith, right? But having faith, then what? One sits at home saying that, oh no, I have lot of faith in God. Many people simply sit at home, you know. We'll watch T20. 2020, right? And when you ask them, but mandir mein kyun nahi aate ho bhai? Bhagwan dil mein hai. I have a lot of faith in God. That's a very low level. Next level is what? If you have faith in God, then what are you doing about it? Then come and associate with devotees, right? That shows your faith and love for God. Associating with devotees and avoiding the association of non-devotees. That shows the faith. Sadhu sangha, right? Then third level is what? After associating with devotees, what do we do? Just go and eat in each other's houses? What do we do? Bhajana kriya. We chant together. Right? And we perform devotional activities together. Right? We hear Bhagavatam together. We take prasadam together. Right? Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. We discuss pastimes of Krishna consciousness together. Dadati prati granati. We go to people's houses. We invite people to our houses. And then discuss Krishna Katha and have prasadam. So many activities we do together. And then by doing those processes, we go to the next stage of bhakti. What is that? Anartha Nivritti, which is what? All that is impure inside the heart, like lust, anger, envy, greed, pride, all those things go away. Right? And then that bhajan what we are doing, that sadhana what we are doing, it becomes consistent. Right now, our sadhana is like this, like this, like this, like this, like this, like this. Right? It's all situational. Like that. Somebody may say, no, I have been chanting 16 rounds. But the question is, do you always complete your 16 rounds in the morning? Or no, Prabhu, depends. Depends on what? Depends on what time I went to bed the earlier day. Depends. Depends on my health also. So our sadhana is right now like this. Depends on my mood also. I had a fight with my wife yesterday, so I'm not in a mood to chant right now. I'll do it later. Or vice versa. My husband irritated me. I'm not in a mood to chant. And like that. Okay. So our sadhana right now is very dependent on external circumstances. We are approaching our Supreme Father depending on circumstances. So that is our problem. But when we come to the platform of Nishtha, then it's just there every day, regardless of any circumstances. And at that stage, when our life, our sadhana becomes like that, then that relationship with the Lord, that ras, starts slowly manifesting in our heart. Till that time, only the cleaning process is going on. Just like, for example, morning light. Morning light, what happens? The sun is there, but darkness is there. The night is now going away and the dawn is coming. So there is a hue in the sky. You know that sun is going to come in few minutes, like that. But it's still not come. But it's all, you know, there are all indications of the sun coming now. Because it's reddish in color, then there are different colors in the sky. And then, pop, it comes out and shines bright, like that. So that is that enlightenment, which comes after Nishtha. But around that platform, this is what is happening. This is what is happening. And when that enlightenment comes, then you don't have to artificially do anything. You don't have to do your sadhana based on the fear of scriptural intentions. It is automatic. You will see Krishna everywhere, like that. That's called as Uddipan. Uddipan means what? Mahaprabhu saw, you know, one hill and he ran towards that, saying that this is Govardhan hill, like that. Or when you see a Kadamba tree, immediately you will start thinking of Krishna. Oh, Lord Krishna was playing flute under the Kadamba tree. When you see a river, you will think that, oh, this is Ganga. Oh, you are immediately reminded of Krishna. Whatever you see, you are reminded of Lord Krishna. Like that. That stage comes after that. Like that. Does it make sense? Which question was I answering? What was the question? So therefore that mood is completely different. It will come only, it will manifest at a later stage. Right now, saying that Lord Krishna, my little Laddu Gopal and all that, those are all more sentimental. You can roam around here and there, let do Gopal. But they are all little bit, it's not that it should not be done, but we have to understand, we should not take it too seriously. They are Prabhu, I mean Vatsalya Rasi. No, not like that. Okay. That rasa will manifest after that we have fight with devotees. And we are going around, roaming around with so many things. So that's not the way. That stage will automatically come when that mood will be revealed by the syllables of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, that rasa will be revealed to us automatically. Till that time, we don't try to imitate those things. Alright. So, in text 25, is all about classification of sacrifices. Sacrifices can be classified as into two types. Sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. That's what Prabhupada says. And then what we have done is just put it in a table, whatever was written in the purport. It's just there in this table. The entire gist of the purport. So there are five variables here. Worshipper, sacrifice, goal, faith and definition. So demigod worshipper, what is the sacrifice that he does? He sacrifices his material possessions. What he will do? Okay, I want to do Kumbhabhishekam or I want to do Ganapati Homa in my house. Then what you will do? You will get all the ingredients for doing that, right? You will pay the pujari, the vadiyar will come home. You will pay, okay, chalo, tumko itna, 1,000 rupees. Then you will get whatever. You will call some friends of yours. You will spend money in buying some prasadam, bhoga for that yagya. You will buy fruits, vegetables, okay, to be offered in the yagya. Right? You will arrange for sticks, whatever. You will pay for the material, you will pay for the brahmanas, everything. You will utilize your house. You will sacrifice some enjoyment in your house. Like that. So, that is what the demigod worshipper does. He sacrifices his material possessions. But what is his goal? His goal is sense enjoyment in accordance with the scriptures. Ultimately, goal is here, and I want to enjoy. Right? He wants some results out of it. He is looking for good results out of it. Looking for dhanam dehi, putram dehi, all that. Give me wealth, give me good son, give me health, right? Give me promotion, give me prestige in society. All these things is what he will ask after doing all that yagya at the end of the day. And what is his faith? The faith of a demigod? Believe in all gods. Sometimes we ask people, you know, you believe in Krishna, we believe in all gods. As if Krishna devotees are, what is that? Fanatics. And the other rest of the world is the liberals. Correct? It doesn't work in every context. Everything that you say that you believe in, everything doesn't. You can't say, who is your wife? This is my wife. It is also my wife. All are my wife. I am liberal, broad-minded. It doesn't work in this context. So in all context, just because you believe in all doesn't mean that it is applicable. It's something great that you have said. It all depends on the context, right? So Lord Krishna is saying Bhagavad Gita. He is saying very clearly, Vyavasayitmika buddhi ekeh kurunanda. Bahu shaka hi anantascha buddhaya avyavasayana. Which means, devotion has to be single-pointed, single-focused. Not that on Tuesday I am doing, you know, Sai Baba. On Wednesday I am doing Durga. On Thursday I am doing Uttamariyaman. On Fridays, you know, I am worshipping Krishna. On Saturday, you know, Saturday Prabhu, weekend, no, Sachin Tendulkar. Monday, Salman Khan. Sunday, and then again back Monday, Sai Baba. Tuesday, you know, something. It will not work like that. Nothing is going to happen in the life. We will just float around like this. That's all. We will think, you know, the beauty is, we think whatever good is happening in our life is because of that what we are doing. But we are foolish. We don't understand that whatever good is coming in our life is anyway coming because of our good karma. Right? And when bad comes, then you'll say, oh, I was worshipping so many people, you know, and still this thing happened in my life. Therefore, you know what I'll do? I'll not worship all these people. I'll worship new set of people. Okay, abhi usko nikal diya bar. He's out. I worshipped you. You didn't give me the results what I wanted. Gone. You're out. New God? Any new gods? Go and ask the neighbor. He said, no, hum log ne wo kiya tha. You know, Kali worship kiya tha humne. First class hai. Mera husband ko bhi promotion mila. You know? So, hum bhi Kali worship karte. This is what is happening. व्यवसायत्मिक बुद्धि एक गुरुनंदन बहुशाखा. बहुशाखा मीन्स वॉट? शाखा मीन्स ब्रांचेस. बहुशाखा मेनी मेनी ब्रांचेस, कभी इधर कभी उधर. इट विल नॉट वर्क. वी हैव टू रियली अंडरस्टैंड वॉट इज भक्ति फ्रॉम द स्क्रिप्चर्स. भक्ति कैन बी डन ओनली टू विष्णु, टू नोबडी एल्स. हू इज सेइंग दैट? आई एम नॉट सेइंग. स्क्रिप्चर्स आर सेइंग भक्ति इज ओनली मेंट फॉर विष्णु. ऑल द डेमी गॉड्स, देवी देवतास, दे आर ऑल वर्किंग अंडर हिम, हैविंग गिवन सो मेनी, दे आर गिवन डिफरेंट डिफरेंट रेस्पॉन्सिबिलिटीज इन दिस मटेरियल वर्ल्ड. बट द सुप्रीम पर्सनैलिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड इज हू? विष्णु. एवरी थिंग इज वर्किंग अंडर हिस डायरेक्शन. सो द डेमी गॉड, द डेमी गॉड वर्शिपर्स, दे डोंट नो दैट. दे विल से हम लोग तो सबको मानते हैं. और दे विल कम एंड टेल यू, तुम इसका नाला है इसके लिए तुम कृष्णा बोलते हैं. इट्स अ फेमस. Many people come and tell us that. I also used to say that. When my friend, you know, during MBA days, he was telling me, I told the same statement. Yeah, tum iska halalo, aise bolta hai. Like that. I said, theek hai, theek hai, theek hai. Shanti rakh. Bhagavad Gita padna. For 2 years, after 2 years, he came to my house. And he removed the Bhagavad Gita from the shelf. And he dusted it and put it back. He said, padna nahi. Kam se kam dust to karke rakh. At least remove the dirt on top of that Bhagavad Gita. Because my house was near the highway, you know, Mumbai Express Highway. So all that, you know, thing was coming. Sorry, Hindi. So he said, if you don't read the Bhagavad Gita, at least remove it once in a while and dust. Remove the dust and put it back, he said. My friend. So it's like that. So we worship so many demigods. Like that. No focus. So such people are called as what? Bahu Ishwaravadis. Bahu Shakha. Bahu Ishwaravadis. Too many gods they propose. The second one, who are these people? Slightly more intelligent than the first category. Why the second fellow is more intelligent than the first fellow? Because the first fellow is planning to be in the cycle of? At least the second fellow is trying to get out of that. Therefore, he is a little bit more intelligent. Right? The first fellow is inside the jail. So, president is asking him, what do you want? What he is asking? He is saying, can you put a fan barabar nahi chalta hai? Fan is not working properly in the jail. Okay. Tube light is not, no, see that light is not working inside the jail. Or something like that. They are not putting enough ghee on the chapatis that they give in the jail. They are asking us to break rocks, but rocks. Break rocks. But it's not sharp tool is not there. Can you give sharp tool? These are the blessings they are asking. What is an intelligent man? What will he ask? Blessing. Take me out of the jail, he will ask. Not how to be comfortable inside the jail. Using different tools by which you can work very hard inside the jail. Like that. So the first people are the ones who are inside the jail and asking for material benedictions out of foolishness. That's why Lord Krishna says, only fools worship the demigods for material benedictions. It does not mean that devotees don't respect the demigods. Please understand. Devotees actually show more respect to Devi Devatas than the people who worship them today. Why? Because devotee will not go to Lord Ganesh temple and ask him, Lord Ganesh, please remove Vigna. No, my son is not getting into Melbourne High School admission. Can you please do something? Your magic. And remove the Vigna Vinayaka. Or that boss has been harassing me. Can you please remove that obstacle from my life? So that I can grow in the organization. Vigna Vinayaka. So devotees don't go like that. When devotee goes to Ganesh temple, what do devotees talk with Ganesh? They'll say, oh my dear Ganpati, what a glorious Vaishnava devotee you are. Because you scripted the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because of which we have devotion to Lord Krishna. When we go like that, then Lord Ganesh is much more pleased than those lakhs of people who are standing in the queue for 24 hours, 30 hours. To take his darshan and at the end of the day only come for asking him something cheap. Isn't it? Suppose I wait outside your house for 30 hours and after that I come to you and I ask you for $20,000. Are you going to be very happy that I waited for 30 hours? Or are you going to think, oh yes, actually he waited not for me but for himself he waited. So that is not bhakti. Just because you waited in a queue doesn't mean you are devotional. Right? It's why you are going there to the first place. That decides whether it's bhakti or whether it's a trade. I give you 10 rupees Archana plate, you give me another $1,000 worth that. So like that. So the demigod worshippers are there. Higher than them, more intelligent than them are the impersonalists. The impersonalists are people who know that There is no point in breaking rocks inside the jail of material existence. Let us escape. So what do they do? What kind of sacrifices they do? Generally, they stay away from all material possessions. Because it's all Maya. At the end of the day, if you actually see, everything material is Maya. It's illusion. Right? So you stay away from that. Don't get too much entangled. Because Jnana tells them the difference between matter and spirit. So for them, everything is difference between matter and spirit. So they only pursue what is spirit. They reject everything that is material. So that is the sacrifice. They sacrifice their own self. Means what? What do you mean by that? Sacrifice their own self. They sacrifice their material designations and individuality, it is mentioned. What do you mean by that? Which means they simply understand that they are not the body. What is the identity of most of us? I am Indian, I am West Indian, I am Telugu, I am Kannada, correct? I am Iyer, I am Iyengar, I am Tengala, I am Vadagalai, like that. I am Gujarati, I am Marwadi. This is our identification. And whatever activities we do also is based on this identification, right? When we come to Melbourne for the first time, for example, you know, I will go and search. You know, any Tamil Sangam is there nearby? Like that. Right? I'm going and searching. The Chinese fellow is also landing. He'll say, any Chinese here? Like that. He'll go to the Chinese corner and then buy a house nearby that. Like that. Okay. So, why we act the way we act? Because of our identity. Who do we think we are? If I have a strong identity that I'm Indian, then I'll associate with all Indians. By that association, I'll do that. Correct? But the problem is that association is that identity of ours is false. It's not true. Simple example. When we come out of India, what do we do? Where Indians live. But when we go to India, what happens? Where Kannadigas live. Correct? But if we live in Bangalore, where all Kannadigas are living, then what we seek then? Where IT people are living, or where people from my company are living, you know, something like that, right? And if it's a colony of people from your own company, then what do we do? Where do people of my same level live? Oh, he's also Kannadiga, he's also Indian, he's also in the profession, but I am manager. I'll deal with like that. So what's happening now? Whatever identity we had outside of India, now that identity is not enough for our satisfaction. Now we want sub-identity, sub-sub-identity, sub-sub-sub-identity. Like that. Isn't it? So many people do like that. Gaurang Prabhu was mentioning, I mentioned in the earlier class also this point, that one boy and girl in New Zealand, you know, they had illicit sex and the girl got pregnant. After that, the boy's parents came to Maharaj. And they are asking that, you know, Maharaj, what to do now? No, actually, we are from Brahman family. The girl is not Brahman family. Gaurang Prabhu tells that, no? As if the activity was very Brahminical. That whatever he wanted to do, he is doing. Then they are saying that I am Brahmin and I am not Brahmin. So this is nonsense. Then you use your identity for your selfish purposes. Like that. Then why did he do that? Correct? In the first place. So all these identities are hypocritical, and all these identities are an illusion. The only real identity is what? That we are soul, we are spirit soul. In this lifetime, yesterday I was talking to, you know, Maria in office. Almost for 30 minutes we were talking about Krishna consciousness. She was very receptive. So, we were talking about identities. So, this identity is very, very powerful. That I am from which country, right? Which geography, etc. So she was asking me, which religion do you follow? We had some conversation, which started somewhere and went somewhere else. But, you know, she asked me, which religion you follow? I said, I don't follow any sectarian religion. I said, what do you mean by that? So I asked her, which religion you follow? She says, Christianity. I said, our religion accommodates everything. And Christianity also comes from that superset of religion. Then she asked me, how? Then I told her that Jesus Christ, from whom Christianity came, what did he say towards the end? There are many more things, my dear Romans, that I want to tell you, but you guys are not ready for it. That means he wanted to tell something more, but he didn't tell, right? So whatever he told, that is Christianity, but whatever he also wanted to tell was also actually Christianity. So we cannot say Christianity is an incomplete religion. We can't say that. Because Jesus Christ knew what he wanted to say. It was just that he was not allowed to say that. So whatever he was saying was that Sanatana Dharma, that religion of loving God. He wanted to tell that. He wanted to expound on that more and more. Right? But what happened? People have taken a very narrow view of that and people are fighting. You are Christian, I am Jew, I am this, you are this. So all these identities are bogus. So but the jnani, the person who has got transcendental knowledge, he understands that he is spirit soul. The spirit soul in this lifetime may be born in Philippines, in the next, and therefore he will be supporting Philippines. Right? Or let's take cricket, where all of us get very emotional. Right? In this lifetime, what is happening? I'm saying, oh, Sachin Tendulkar, when he hits a four against Pakistan bowler, I'm very happy. But next lifetime, I can be born in Pakistan. Then what do? Who do I support then? Then when Tendulkar is hitting a four, then I'm not very happy. Oh my God. Vakkar ko maar diya hai, something like that. So two people on the opposite sides of one imaginary line are having imagination that I am this line and I am that line. Few years before, it was all one country. Correct? There was no Pakistan. It was all one country. Now if you go back and back like that in geography, then it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the whole universe was only one, called as Bharatvarsh. Not India. Bharatvarsh was called, ruled by Maharaj Bharat. Now then continental drift happened and so many things happened. Different people settled down in different places. Even if you see today what's happening in Andhra Pradesh, you're seeing that, no? Somebody is saying I'm what? Telangana. Somebody is saying I'm Secunderabad. Whatever. I don't understand that. But Andhra. Okay. So till yesterday everything was one. Suddenly today everything is different. Two people are fighting based on one line which does not exist. The line doesn't exist anywhere. Somebody is in somebody's mind. This line exists. Right? So therefore all our identities are born out of human beings' greed. It is not given by Krishna. So we cannot blame him. Oh Lord, eh Parvadigar, tu agar hai, to dunya mein jhagda kyun hai? You know, if you are there, my dear Lord, then why there is war? He didn't create any line. We create a line and we start fighting. What he will do? He didn't create that line, isn't it? So this impersonalist, he understands that all this nonsense which is happening in the world, all the misery which is happening in the world is a result of so many imaginary lines and a result of so many illusory identities. So he is better one step above the demigod worshipper. Therefore what he does, he rejects, he sacrifices all these material designations. His only designation is what? I am spirit soul. Correct? And then what he does, his goal is what? To merge into the supreme spirit, which is called as Brahman. The supreme spirit is called as Brahman. So he wants to just merge into that and get out of the material world. That's all. And for him, all the forms are what? Temporary. Because form means what? It's coming through Maya. Brahman coming in contact with mode of material nature is a form for that person. Okay? So forms are temporary. Such a person is called as what? Brahmavadi. He sees everything as Brahman, as manifestations of Brahman. All forms also he is as manifestation of the formless. Whereas a devotee, what does he know? He understands that formlessness comes from form. Right? Because there is form, there is a word in the dictionary called as formless. So form cannot come from formlessness. Formlessness comes from form. That's the switch. That's the mental switch which a devotee makes. That is where it differentiates impersonalist and devotee. Both are intelligent. Both want to get out of the material world. Both know that they are the spirit soul. Both do not have false identities. But still, one only thinks that he is spirit soul, whereas the other regards the form aspect of the Lord. And tries to develop rasa, like Mataji said. One of the five mukhya rasas. Whereas the Maya Brahmavadi is not developing any rasa. He is just merging into the Brahman. And what happens to the Brahman, to the such a person who merges into Brahman? After some time, Prabhupada says, what happens to them? They get bored. Because in Brahman, there is no activity to do. Right? So he is searching for activity somewhere. And then what happens for doing activity? Where you have to come? You have to either go up there or you have to come down. But to go up there, what do you need? You need a
human form.
which is the first verse of the next class. What is that? Anyone knows? 4.34. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti tenyanam jnaninas tattva darshinah. To attain God, we need a guru. We need a spiritual master, without which we can't attain God. So from Brahman, what do you have to do? You have to attain a guru, no? Now what do? Guru is also not in Brahman.
You have to get a human form. Right?
Correct. So they have to come down and get a guru. Now for that, what do you do first? They don't understand this because they are there. So they are still seeking out what to do in Brahman. So outside, they are seeing light. So they see, start seeing inside. So when you say inside, what is that? Dhyana yoga. When you do Dhyana yoga, what happens? From inside, then what happens? Paramatma comes and reveals that you need a spiritual master. Same thing what Paramatma told in front of Narad Muni. You will not see me in this lifetime. So Lord will come as Paramatma in the heart of the Dhyana Yogi. But then ultimately he has to come down, serve a spiritual master. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Pa Prasade Paye Bhakti Lata Beej. So that Bhakti Lata Beej has to come. The seed of devotion has to be sowed by a guru inside our heart. So that person in Brahman, he has to come down again and get a guru, and by serving that guru, then the person goes back. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Sochati Na Kankshati. There is no lamentation or hankering in the Brahman layer. But Sama Sarveshu Bhakteshu Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. But still, from that platform, then one can definitely easily attend to bhakti, but he has to develop bhakti. He has to develop bhakti. That's why he said Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. He has to develop bhakti by serving a spiritual master. Yes.
Can Brahmavadis perform akarma? Because if akarma is the only way they can get liberated, how they are bound to karma by karma or vikarma for their existence or for their sustenance in this world. So how do they then get liberation from the world?
Brahmavadis, how do they get liberation?
Yeah.
Because Brahmavadis still acknowledge the impersonal feature of the Lord.
Okay.
They still, externally a Brahmavadi may perform the same activities as a devotee does. But his goal is Brahman, not Bhagavan. He still acknowledges the impersonal feature of the Lord. At the end of the day, please understand, the absolute truth can be understood in three features. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti Shakti.
Okay.
Three features are there. He is just attracted to one feature of the Lord.
Okay. So in a way, they are also performing a karma. Then.
Yes, Prabhupada says that Brahma, that impersonalists are also coming under the classification of transcendentalists. Transcendentalist means what? Beyond the three modes of material nature. So beyond the three modes of material nature means akarma. But that is still quite not there. Akarma should eventually lead to rasa. Highest is rasa. Not simply, you know, it should be rasa. We have to develop that rasa with the Lord. Personal rasa. Okay. So devotee, he sacrifices, respects, and sometimes even, sorry, what is the sacrifice? What does the devotee sacrifice? What does a devotee sacrifice?
Everything.
In one sense, yeah, the sacrifice of a devotee means what? That he is utilizing everything in the service of Krishna. That is the sacrifice. Of course, a devotee does many sacrifices. It is said that the greatest sacrifice is what? Preaching. Preaching is the greatest sacrifice which a devotee undertakes for the Lord. So a devotee, what does he do? The reason it is given like this is because the impersonalist is what he is doing. He is rejecting matter. He is not dealing with matter. But a devotee deals with matter and uses it in the service of Krishna. A karmakandi deals only with matter for sense gratification. An impersonalist does not deal with matter and only deals with spirit. A devotee deals with matter for the pleasure of Supreme Spirit. What is the difference? Goal is what? Satisfaction of Lord Krishna through service. Faith is what? What's the devotee's faith? Lord Krishna is the absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee has faith in the personal form of the Lord. He has attraction, rati, towards the personal form of the Lord. Such a person is called as a Vaishnava. Chapter 7 and 8, sorry, 7 and 9, they elaborate further on demigod worship. So when we come to those chapters, we'll talk more about demigod worship. Any questions or comments? Okay. 26. Some, within bracket, the unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. And others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. Rupanaga Prabhu.
The members of the four divisions of human life, namely Brahmacharya, Vidura, and the Sannyasis, are all meant to become perfect yogis or consciousness. Since the human life is not meant for our enjoying sense gratification like the animals, the four orders of human life are all arranged that one may become perfect in spiritual life. The Brahmacharis are students under the care of a bona fide spiritual master, control the mind by abstaining from the sense gratification. The Brahmachari hears only words concerning Krishna consciousness. Hearing is the basic principle for understanding, and therefore the pure Brahmacharis engage fully in Hare
Nama Anukirtan,
chanting and hearing of the glories of the Lord. He restrains himself from the vibrations of material sounds, and his hearing is engaged in the transcendental sound vibrations of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Similarly, the householders who have some license for sense gratification perform such an act with great restraint. Sex life, intoxication, meat eating are general tendencies of human society. But a regulated householder does not indulge in unrestricted sex life and other sense gratification. Marriage on the principle of religious life is therefore current in our civilized human society, because that is the way for restricted sex life. This restricted and unattached sex life is also a kind of ekna, because the restricted householder sacrifices his general tendency towards sense gratification for higher.
How do you think? Shri Krishna Prabhu, even Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't have a Bhagavad Gita. But are you hearing? Sure. I'll ask you questions. Any points?
All the ashramas are meant for self-realization.
Yes. Anything else? Everyone is tired today. Oh, is this room stuffy? Yeah. Just open the window or something, I don't know. Please don't go to sleep in the room.
So, Kavi, what is the unadulterated Brahmachari? Why is that term used? Brahmachari is Brahmachari, so why is it in the translation?
So Prabhupada is talking about genuine brahmacharis. Brahmacharis who are not doing shobhaji. He is not talking about mithyacharis. You remember we saw saints and swindlers. So he is talking about those brahmacharis who genuinely want to pursue bhakti. Not about those who simply, you know, wear a saffron robe and cheat the public.
Saying
that only Brahmachari sacrifice their senses in the fire of mental control, because even grihastha are actually sacrificing,
right?
So they sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control, yeah. Grihastha sacrifice the object of the senses in the fire of the senses. Okay, we'll come to that. That's what we are going to discuss. Just hold your question. Anything else? Okay. So, the Lord here is explaining that sacrifices have to be done according to one's position in the Varna and Ashrama. The goal of, what is the goal of Varna Ashrama Dharma? Yes, what is a perfect yogi? Who is a perfect yogi? Who is a perfect yogi? Who has developed love for God? So the whole purpose of Varanashrama Dharma is Samasiddhir Haritoshanam. Atapumbir Dvidashreshta Varanashrama Vibhagashah So anushtistasya dharmasya samasiddhir haritasham. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1. So that is the goal of all Varanashis. So all sacrifices that are done should be in accordance with one's Varana and Ashrama and should be for the pleasure of Hari, Lord Hari. So here Prabhupada is writing, Lord Krishna is mentioning that the unadulterated brahmachari sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of sense control. Let's understand with examples. A good example is the Chaupati temple in Bombay. Now the brahmachari, and this is true of many other temples also, so please don't misunderstand. It's not about just one temple, but this is just an example that I'm taking, which struck me. So the brahmachari's main duty is what? Why do the brahmacharis join the ashram? What do they do when brahmacharis join the ashram new?
Studying Veda.
Correct. Patan patan. Main is hearing. First they have to hear. First job, mainly you just sit and hear. That's all. Attend the morning program, Prabhupada said. And hear Bhagavatam class. The brahmachari, when he joins the temple, doesn't start giving classes. He has to spend many years in hearing before he can go out and preach like that. So the brahmachari's main duty is hearing and performing and chanting. Harer Nama. Anukirtan. Chanting as prescribed by the acharyas. The difference between kirtanam and anukirtanam is what? Kirtanam means performing kirtanam. Anukirtanam means performing kirtanam as performed by the acharyas. For example, some people come and say, you know, Prabhu, I am chanting when I am driving in the fingers. Like that. Is this okay? Because you said that chanting tatra pita niyamita smaranena kala. There are no rules and regulations for chanting. Prabhu, I am chanting in the bathroom. Is that okay? Whenever I go to toilet, I am always chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Like that. So what is the answer? Answer is yes. You will, chanting will not get polluted. Because you are chanting in the toilet, chanting doesn't become a polluted activity, but chanting will not give its best results in the toilet. Correct? That's not the real place where you can really meditate on the Lord. Isn't it? Correct? So what is, so that, and that's not the way the acharya has chanted. Yes, I agree. You may say that, you know, Gaur Kishan Das Babaji Maharaj chanted in the toilet. Why he did that? Because he was frustrated with people coming and asking him, you know, things which are irrelevant for devotional life. So he wanted to get out of, you know, association of these mundane people who used to disturb his sadhana. So he locked himself in a, went into a public, you know, into a latrine. And there he started spending full day, he used to do sadhana. Like that. So nobody will disturb him there. That is a different issue. But we are not quite there right now. Right? And you actually, we don't need to go to the latrine to chant. Right? So we are chanting as the acharyas have prescribed. So what are the acharyas have prescribed? Chanting should be done in the morning hours. Then we can't say, no, I will not do morning hours. Then it will not give the benefits. This is prescribed by the acharyas. So there is a difference between kirtanam and anukirtanam. Anukirtanam means as prescribed by the acharyas. Then it will give full results. Take the medicine as prescribed by the physician. Oh, I have problem, you know, stomach upset. Oh, I have constipation. So doctor ne bola ek hi lenega. Let me take full thing. No. What will happen then? You know what will happen after that. Correct? So take the dosage as, but then I am taking medicine. No, I took 5 tablets instead of 1. No, take the medicine as prescribed by the physician. Anukirtana. Not to argue. If the acharyas have said do something in a particular way, then we don't argue. No, but my opinion is like this. Who cares about our opinion? Isn't it? Yeah, we can have opinions, but we will remain in the material world with our opinions. Right? We have to come back many lifetimes just because we have opinions. So Harirna Manukitana. So Brahmachari's prime duty is hearing and following in the footsteps of senior devotees. So in the Chaupati temple, for example, the moment a Brahmachari enters, he is given a person who is called as his counselor. Immediately he is under somebody. So a section of the Brahmacharis are, for example, under Gauranga Prabhu, a section of the Brahmacharis will be under Gaur Gopal Prabhu, section will be under Radha Gopinath Prabhu, like that. They are all channelized like that. Sometimes there is a hierarchy there. Then Radha Gopinath Prabhu may have 3 devotees under him who are sub-heads, and then the brahmacharis will fall under that. So there is lot of personal care, you know, like that. Okay. So that is an example. Now all the brahmacharis who come there, where do they come from? Can you say that, you know, oh, I am a high school, you know, I have failed school, you know, so therefore I don't know, sab maya hai, school mein fail ho gaya, I have failed in education, I tried little bit sports also, you know, I just failed there, I am just nukha, good for nothing, so Prabhu, I have just come to the temple, so I am just thinking that us, all maya, nobody recognizing, let's come, become brahmachari, is it like that? No. All the brahmacharis who are joining the temple, they are highly educated. Number one, they are very good in their studies. Most of the brahmacharis, many of them are IIT, you know, nine pointers. High CGPA scores, like that. Many of them are computer science from IIT Bombay. These are the quality of brahmacharis who come, right? Big, big institutes. Many of them are doctors who come and join as brahmacharis. Not only after their education, they have to undergo work experience. They have to go and work in the corporate world, then they have to come and join as brahmachari. So they know what life is outside. They know what struggle is outside. Right? And when you go to the corporate world, then what happened? You are tested with money. You start earning money. The moment you start earning money, then you want that to continue. Right? That's why many times when you are doing a job, it's very difficult to give up a job because you are getting money out of it. Right? Now if they can give up all that and then for Krishna consciousness sake, they can come to the ashram. Yes. That means they had an opportunity to succeed in the material world. They chose not to because of higher love for Krishna. So they didn't come to bhakti just because they couldn't do anything else in life. They could have done, but they chose not to. And that is the filter criteria for brahmacharis entering the ashram. So when they come here, they are engaged, put under senior devotee. Their main duty is hearing. So therefore, when they come with such a background, then that is called as unadulterated. Then you are not coming into the ashram to do some politics or to, you know, get some power. Because you already, that's why they had to work there. You finish all that there itself and come. When you want to come. Like unadulterated brahmacharis. So, and then they come here. And what are they told? The first thing they are told is, no unnecessary dealings with the opposite sex. No need to discuss too much with Matajis. Do you have any service? They are told. Unless you have a service, there is no reason to discuss with any Matajis. So, they are given the practice of how to deal with women. No unnecessary dealings. For the purpose of preaching, yes, you can deal with the lady. But no frivolous dealings after that. No sitting, joking and talking this, that, etc. etc. No. Right? Even if something is, even if kartal is required and Mataji is having kartal, right? Then there are other ways, asking a senior devotee or something like that. You can make some other arrangement. Or if you want to, if you see Mataji is having some problem, then the brahmachari doesn't go to her and say, Mataji, you have a problem, aapke aankhon mein aansu? No, not like that. No, not the Bollywood type. No, I have come the knight in shining armor to solve your problem. No. And then therefore, then after that, you know, they will start saying that, pata hi nahi chala kab ho gaya. No, I was, Mataji was pouring out to me and I was listening to her and I don't know when it all happened. Prabhu, now I want to enter Grihastha Ashram. No, it doesn't work like that. So if you don't have business, don't deal. Very simple. Unadulterated brahmachari. No need to cut it there itself. Cut it. Right? Why are you coming to the ashram? You are coming to develop your Krishna consciousness. If you don't have character, then how can you be a Vaishnava? One has to build character. So the character is built by discipline. Strict discipline. Unadulterated brahmacharis. Under the care of a senior devotee. And the atmosphere itself is such that there is nothing much for sense gratification. You can't do anything for sense gratification. So either you have to be in service or you take rest. Yes, there are provision for sports or whatever. Those kind of activities are perfectly fine. But not frivolous sense gratification. Now, when these brahmacharis, eventually after training few years in the ashram, even in our temple, we have excellent brahmacharis. We have Gopavarnesh Prabhu, Naishtika Brahmachari. Right? Excellent stars we have. Nandamandir Prabhu, then we have Bhaktisara Prabhu, we have Adrian Prabhu. These people, they have worked very, very hard. They have significant contribution to the preaching movement in this temple. Of course, they have different talents. Some have talents in giving Bhagavatam class, some have talents in catering program. But invariably, all of them have worked very hard. They have served the Lord in their own way. They have been a part and parcel of the temple. They have performed sadhana in line with what Prabhupada has prescribed. And some of them, what happens? After some time, they had a desire I will accept Grihastashram. They have laudably accepted Grihastashram, which is perfectly fine. And such people are called as Grihastha Brahmacharis. Though they are in the Grihastha Ashram, they are still as good as any Brahmachari, because the purpose of marriage was not to enjoy the wife's body. The purpose of the marriage was what? To serve Krishna together. Some people have that kind of an... Some people have an aptitude that, no, I just want to, you know, take sannyas. But some others, they still want to serve Lord Krishna. But the institution of Grihastha Ashram is more conducive for them to serve. It is better not to be a brahmachari, no? Sorry, it's better to accept Grihastha Ashram than to sit as a brahmachari and think, oh my God, you know, Hare Krishna, I am always thinking of, you know, Madhuri Dixit in my mind, you know, and then sitting in a saffron robe and thinking about that. Madhuri Dixit is a famous Bollywood heroine. You know? How do you know? She's very popular. I didn't know how popular Bollywood is. Anyway, so the mind is meditating on the opposite sex, but the clothes are saffron. There is no point. Better remove that, put white, and marry and serve the Lord. Remove that disturbance out of your life. So the whole idea of Grihastha Ashram is remove that disturbance and have a Grihastha Ashram where you have regulated sense gratification. Prabhupada uses that word. What does he say? Regulated householders. Regulated householders means what? Yes. There is, in the Grihastha Ashram, the husband and wife can unite. But that should be regulated, not unregulated. If it becomes unregulated, then what will happen? Then the respect is lost for each other. The whole purpose is how to enjoy it, you know, with each other's body, that's all. The husband is not looking at the wife as a human being. The wife is not looking at the husband as a human being. Worst is, they are not looking at each other as devotees. Just enjoy. Like that. And the whole life will be centered around how to do that enjoyment. Like devotees, what is the least important room for a devotee? In the house, what is the least important room for a devotee? The bedroom. There's nothing to be done there. Correct? Because the consciousness of a devotee is like that. That is the least important room. What is the most important room?
A kitchen.
Yes. 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 Why? Yes. You're right. The kitchen and hall, yes. Yes, the kitchen and hall. Why? Because the kitchen is for preparing food for the pleasure of Krishna. Devotees, you eat only prasadam. Right? So the kitchen is an important room, and then the hall is an important room. Why? Because we have altar in the hall. Devotees don't keep altar in, you know, in some corner in the closet. No. Where is God in your house? Oh, Prabhu, shelf kolke dega. No. The God is the, he's the owner of the house. Incidentally, I am there in that house. That is the mood of a Vaishnava. Right? So he's very much in the front room. Like that. Right? So bedroom is just, oh, take rest. That's all. And even if a devotee unites, then the devotee knows that the purpose of union with the opposite sex is to beget children. Not just go on and on and on. So that is important. So having got this kind of a brahmachari training, then when such a brahmachari adopts Grihastha Ashram, it becomes easy to follow, much easy to follow these principles than if someone were not to be trained in brahmachari at all. So there's a sacrifice. So some sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control, and others sacrifice the object of the senses in the fire of the senses. So some abstain from any sense gratification with the opposite sex. Some indulge in regulated sense gratification, but take the responsibility, bear Krishna conscious children and deliver them from the planet. So that is the difference.
Is that what it means? That the others sacrifice objects of senses in the fire of senses.
And wherever you read sacrifice, within bracket, always let that program run your mind. For the pleasure of Krishna. For the pleasure of Krishna. So devotees accept Grihastha Ashram for the pleasure of Krishna. Why? Because they believe that they can serve more effectively in the ashram than not being in the ashram. Because all of us have different, we are all different. We have different natures. Okay. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Vanaprastha ashram,
yes. So, a brahmachari who never enters the grihastha ashram, for him there is nothing called as vanaprastha. Then he directly moves to sannyasa ashram. Vanaprastha ashram is basically for householders, like most of us. So, vanaprastha means what? Go to the forest. In Sanskrit, in Hindi, ikkavan means what? Yeah. 51. 51 is called as ikkavan, bhavan, like that. So, in the early days, these are all coming from Sanskrit. What do you mean by ikkavan? That means that is the time when you have to go to the one. That is why it's called as ikkavan. Which means 50 is the age for attaining vanaprastha. In Kali Yuga, what has Prabhupada prescribed? 25 years brahmachari, 25 years grihastha, 25 years vanaprastha and 25 years of sannyas. So, eventually even a householder at some point in time should take sannyas. Assuming the lifespan is 100 years. But now the lifespan is how much? 80 max. You can say 80 looks a little bit realistic. Imaginable at least. 80. So which means you divide now by 4 and see. So all of us should take vanaprastha at 40. Okay. Think about it. Mortgage will not allow. Alright. So what do you do? What do you do then? So ideally, okay, jokes apart, 50 is the stage for vanaprastha in Kali Yuga. So for a devotee, so what is vanaprastha exactly? Vanaprastha means that a devotee now, first is no work, no going to earn money. Whatever is the savings, just live with that and use the remaining period of the life to do tivrena bhakti yoga, to intensify your bhakti. Because right now what happens, yes, I understand, we all get up in the morning, we sit for 2 hours, we do chanting, we do our puja, right? We do our aarti to the Lord, we offer bhoga to the Lord, we say our prayers, and then we wear our suit and tie and then go to office, right? I understand that. But what happens when you go to that place? For next 8 to 10 hours, what happens? Forgotten, completely forgotten. You are then in that whole mess of work, politics, bickering, so many things you have to handle, right? And then when you come out, then you forget that, oh, oof, am I a devotee or what? Like that. When you come out, then it's such a relief, right? But yes, why do we still do that work? We do that work as a sacrifice to the Lord. We do that also for the pleasure of the Lord. We don't go to office to become a big boss there. Why do devotees go to office?
To protect their bhakti,
that's all. We go because at the end of the day, if we don't have an income, how can we do any service? Right? If we don't have an income, how can we maintain our body and soul? So, devotees are very clear why they go. Beyond that, devotee doesn't aspire for much out of that. We do our work sincerely. We do our work sincerely. Why we do our work sincerely?
Not to lose the job.
So, no, we don't lose our job. Right? And also, it is better that a devotee conducts himself and does his work carefully because we are ambassadors of Krishna. Isn't it? If a devotee is sloppy, then what happens? If a devotee is sloppy in work, what happens? Then people, when you go to preach to them, they'll say, hey, toh lukha. Kuch kaam ka nahi hai, iske liye bhakti karta. So therefore, we try our best to maintain a clean record of whatever responsibilities that we are given. Whether it is an office or outside office, we try to maintain a clean record. But the only difference between us and the others is that the others are always stressed. Oh, when will I get my promotion? Oh, that fellow is taking my chair. What to do? Or, you know, that ego is there. Even in words you see in office, people try to put one-upmanship over the other. You will see that always, right? But what we have to do, you have to say, okay, Krishna, you have put me in this position now. Now let me do my work and get out at 6 o'clock. Right? Beyond that, I am not attached. So we also do work, but we do work with detachment. We are not, at the end of the day, we know the results of work is given by Krishna. The moment we think that we are the ones who are doers, then we get stressed with our work. The moment we know that, fine, I'm just doing my best, I'm a fool, I'm doing something here, based on the intelligence that you have given me, based on the abilities that you have given me, oh my dear Lord, and let whatever happen for your pleasure. I did discuss that, you know, last class or somewhere I discussed that. This is a prayer that I say every morning. When I go to office, the first thing I sit, I have some photographs of the Lord all around me. Sometimes people ask me, what's going on here? But The only prayer is, oh Lord, I am a fool. I have come here to this place now. Now I have to spend 8 hours in this place. Right? Let whatever happen be for your pleasure. If I have to become a fool in office, so be it. If you are happy with it. If I have to become a king in office today, if you are happy, then you make me a king. No problem. But whatever happens, it's for you. Nothing mine. Aham Krishnaya idam na mama. In that mood, we go to work. With a sense of responsibility, with a sense of detachment. Beyond that, you don't get entangled too much with everyone. And obviously, what do? At workplace, we constantly look out for people who are very favorable to Krishna consciousness. And we try to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Then what happens? That workplace itself becomes a temple. So what decides? It's only the consciousness which decides. Whether that work is bhakti yoga or not is decided by the consciousness of the person. Externally, we are also working, others are also working. Everything, nobody will see the difference between a devotee and any other person at office. Internally, the difference is there.
Alright, so go further. 27. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind.
So I'm sure all of you have read and come, so we will not keep that up. So in text 27, the Lord discusses Ashtanga Yoga. The Ashtanga Yoga, what the Lord says that in the body we have 10 kinds of air. In this body we have 10 kinds of air, out of which 5 are major kinds of air and 5 are minor. What are the major air? Prana, Apana, Vyana, Udana and Samana. These are the like sometimes, you know, in childhood I know my father used to, you know, say one prayer. Om Pranaya Swaha, Om Apanaya Swaha, Om Samanaya Swaha, Om whatever. Om Brahmane Swaha, Maha Nevedyam, Nevedyam, Samarpayami. He used to say like that. And this is the year, you know, we used to worship like that. But I didn't understand what he was saying. He also did not understand. Neither of us understood. Right? But now when, you know, he's there on the camera, if he sees it in Bombay, then now we all will understand what's going on. Now what do we say? We don't say pranaya, apanaya and all that. We have nothing to do with all these airs. What we are saying, oh my dear Lord, here is the bhoga for your pleasure. Please accept it. As simple as that. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradaya. Please accept it. I am your servant. Please, we have prepared this. Please enjoy this prasadam, this bhoga. So, that in the body, that 10 kinds of air are 5 are minor and 5 major. Now, it is said that by controlling these airs in the body, then one can control the mind. That is the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And Ashtanga Yogi controls his mind by controlling the movement of the airs in the body. So, control of mind is the central point. Let's not get digressed with the yoga systems. What are we talking about? Controlling the mind. So, the Ashtanga Yogi controls the mind through the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So, the Patanjali system, which is the system of Hatha Yoga, is mentioned here as to how to control those life airs technically. All that is, some description is given here. So, when you control your mind, then that is favorable for getting detached from material life. And Prabhupada mentions that the goal is Pratyagatma. There are two types of Atma. One Atma which is contaminated with the desire for sense gratification, and the other Atma which is called as Pratyagatma, which is Atma which is dedicated to self-realization. And all this Ashtanga Yoga, the entire topic is described in detail in chapter 6. So when we come to chapter 6, we will discuss all that. But right now, just understand that the Ashtanga Yogi tries to control the mind through the process of controlling the life air. And why does he want to control the mind? Because he is also wanting self-realization. The devotee also wants self-realization. The Jnana Yogi also wants right? 28. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions and others become enlightened by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, which is called as the Ashtasiddhis, eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada mentions four types of yajñas over here. What are the four types? One is sacrificing the possessions. Second is performing severe austerities. That is second type. Third is by performing Ashtanga Yoga and no, Siddhi Prapti you will get by that. By following mystic process. Or then fourth is by jnana. By studying the Vedas. So by all this people try to advance in transcendental knowledge. Now we have to understand that all these methods, they will definitely elevate us on the path of transcendental knowledge, but they have to be only regarded as stepping stones to the final goal. None of this will automatically lead to the ultimate destination, but they will all lead us to that destination. They will all lead us as stepping stones. They are stepping stones. Even a person who is the best Ashtanga Yogi still has to do something delta to achieve what the devotee is anyway achieving. Does it make sense? All these yogis, they will, after they finish perfection in their yoga system, they still have to do a delta process of bhakti to be able to attain love of God. Whereas a devotee does not have to go through all these yoga processes. A bhakta doesn't need to go through jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, ashtanga yoga, mysticism, nothing. All the devotee does is simply serve the Lord and go back to Godhead. If not through the merit quota, through the mercy quota. In India, we have merit quota and mercy quota, right? Mercy means sifarish, influence, right? So people who can't get through merit, get through the other way. So even in this bhakti process, it is like that. If we think that I'll become a pure devotee, then I'll go back to Godhead, it's, at least for me, it seems a little bit unlikely in this lifetime, right? But certainly what we do, we try to execute the orders of our guru by which we will get mercy. By that mercy, even if our qualification is lagging, the guru will fill in for that. Chalo, aajao. Apna hi aadmi. Come. He's my man. No problem. You have served me, that's fine. I'll compensate. Prabhupada compensates. Of course, we can't take that for granted and not do anything. Because we have to please our spiritual master. And then the mercy flows. So all these processes which are mentioned here in this verse, they are mere stepping stones to bhakti. And the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness cannot be automatically attained by any of these processes. What is needed for Krishna consciousness?
Mercy.
Mercy is needed. So the mercy is absent in all these processes, if you see. There is no mercy element in any of these austerities.
Personal endeavor.
Everything is based on personal endeavor. So therefore, if you fail in this process, you are finished. If you succeed, still there is something to be done. And if you fail, you are finished. Whereas in the process of bhakti, there is nothing called as failure, and success is assured. Why? Even if you fail, Vaishnavas will compensate. By mercy quota, you will go. That is the power of bhakti. It's a sure shot, easy process to attain transcendental realization. Pramod Prabhu, you had a question?
To some degree you answered the question, but following any of these four methods or processes, are they stepping stones or they are impediments to getting to bhakti state? Either one can get entangled into these things and may never come out. But
depends on whichever way you look. If you go to a shopping mall, is a staircase an impediment or an opportunity? If you have a lift, then you'll ask, why is staircase required? Why is an escalator required? So you can decide how you want to go to the third floor or tenth floor. You can take the staircase and go, or you can take the escalator and go, or you can take the elevator and go. So bhakti yoga is like the elevator. In this elevator, the door closes. So you don't see what's happening. You don't care about what's happening. You just go to your final destination. Whereas what happens to the jnana yogi? He attains step by step by step. First he gets out of the material world, then he goes to Brahman. It's like the escalator. You go to the first floor, then you are watching, oh, there is cosmetics here. You go to the second floor, then you are, you know. And there is a chance of getting digressed in each floor. You went to purchase something else, and you went and purchased something else. Because floor by floor shopping you did. You went to buy a bread maker, and you came with a cricket bat. It's like that. Actually, it can happen like that in shopping. Correct? So whereas what happens, the moment you know that bread maker is available on level 15, you sit inside the lift, it will straight go and bang, you come out, the bread maker is there, you take it, sit in the lift and go home. So this is just an analogy. So bhakti yoga, jnana karvari anavritam, you don't have anything to do with jnana, you don't have to do anything with karma. But you still have all those processes in bhakti directed towards the ultimate goal. So they are only stepping stones for a devotee. Jnana. They are not an absolute end in itself. Is it clear? 29. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming and the incoming breath into the outgoing and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. This is a key memory verse for all of you. I was joking. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. Thank God for bhakti yoga. Who wants to follow this process? Outgoing, the outgoing air. Oh, come back. Oh, incoming air. Chant and go back to Godhead. Simple.
Understand this verse.
Correct. First of all, it takes time to understand this verse. Then what to speak of practicing all these things. But the relief is what? Lord Krishna is saying, Sarva Dharman, ye sab chodo, he is saying. Maam ekam sharanam raja. Just surrender unto me. That's all. Enjoy. Come back to Godhead. Rupa said, chant and be happy. That's all. So we don't have to go too much into all these things.
Actually, we must have done all this in a previous life. Correct. Only we have come to this stage.
Correct. This is what is mentioned by Devahuti to Kapila Mahana, Kapila Muni. She mentions this. That these devotees, what is that verse?
Aho
Bata Swap Pacho Te Griyan. So in that verse,
or this thanks chanting the holy name of the Lord.
Jivagre something.
Ya Jivagre Vartate Nama Tubhyam. So which means what? Devahuti is telling Lord Kapila that, oh Lord, how glorious are your devotees who are chanting, because a person who is chanting has already done all this in the previous lifetimes. He has mastered the Vedas, everything. That is why he has come to the last stage of bhakti. So whenever you get Krishna bhakti, you have to assume that that is the last cycle of your life. After this, no birth and death. Go back to Godhead. Last few lifetimes, maximum. And then even if one comes back on an assignment of the Lord. Just like a criminal also goes to the prison and an IAS officer also goes to the prison. But still there is a difference. You don't laugh at the IAS officer, Indian Administrative Service fellow. Oh, you are in prison. Bad boy. You don't look at him and say like that. Criminals, you are there in a place where criminals are there. You understand? Obviously, he is going on a post. Whereas criminal is going because he stabbed someone. There is still a difference. So like that, a devotee will come back into the material world on an assignment. But Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale. That is why Prabhupada we say what? Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya. But by the order of will of Krishna he has come, not because of his karma. Like that. So in 29, the process of Hatha Yoga is mentioned, which is controlling airs and reversing the direction of the passage of the air in the body. If anyone of you is more interested, wait till the next few chapters. The goal of Hatha Yoga and Pranayama. These are two processes. Hatha Yoga has got a strong component of Pranayama in that. What is the goal of all this? The goal is, three goals are mentioned. One is to control the senses. Two is to what? To increase the longevity of life. Because an intelligent person wants to go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. But an intelligent person also knows that if I live an ordinary life, then I may die at 60 or 80. So therefore he wants a long life. So the yogi does all this so that he has more time for self-realization. Otherwise he'll be subjugated by the laws of Kali Yuga, which means the average life is 100 years. So you'll still find, you know, if you read Radhanath Swami Maharaj's book, lot of paranormal experiences he has seen in the Himalayas, like that. My mother also used to tell me, you know, she was under one Swami girl in her childhood. And nobody knew the age of that person. But some people say that he has been around for 200, 300 years like that. So this is possible through the process of yoga, because our lifespan is determined by the number of breaths. The unit of measure is number of breaths, not the material conception of time. So then by breathing slowly, then what's happening? You're prolonging your time in the material world like that. So that is the process of this thing. So to control the senses is the goal. Second goal is to increase the longevity. And the third one is to help advance spiritually. Three goals out of this. Now, Krishna consciousness gets all these three goals anyway. Controlling senses, what happens? How do we control senses? By engaging the senses in the service of the Lord. Devotees don't eat non-prasadam. Right? We eat only prasadam. Correct? We abstain from non-prasadam. By which we get control over our senses. Like that. Then, how does devotee get longevity? Because in this lifetime itself, we will go back to the spiritual world, which is beyond birth. This is old age and death. So it's eternal life. Right? For a non-devotee, death is the end of existence. For a devotee, death opens the door to eternal life. So the devotees don't care for longevity. And the third aspect, help in spiritual advancement. Definitely when we chant and hear, Krishna Bhakti is going to come. Right? And many of us have experienced that. We may not have be Paramahamsas, but all of us at least have some affection for the Lord. Isn't it? Which was not there before. Right? Because of which we are in the movement today. What is keeping us in the movement? Only attraction for Krishna. What else? Isn't it? Of course, then Krishna Prasad. So, Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all the types of sacrifices that are mentioned here. Because it's a direct service to the Lord. There is automatic sense control because of prasadam. The process is also quick. It can be attained in one lifetime. One lifetime is, we can go back to God. No need of complex process. And mercy is there, which is absent in the other yoga systems. So we have to remember all this. Next. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. So the purposes of all sacrifice is reiterated here. This verse is simply repeating whatever was said earlier. What are the purposes of sacrifice? Control the senses from sense gratification. Freedom from sinful reaction. Number two. Third is transcendental knowledge. Develop transcendental knowledge. Jnana and bhakti. And fourth is eternal happiness in the spiritual kingdom. Is it clear? Want me to repeat that?
Yes.
I realized. Some of you have lost me. So there are four purposes of all sacrifices which are reiterated in this verse. Control of senses from sense gratification. Freedom from sinful reaction. Transcendental knowledge. Jnana leading to bhakti. And fourth is eternal happiness in the spiritual kingdom. So that is what is the gist of text 30.
Eternal happiness from?
In
the spiritual kingdom. Okay. 31. O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next? All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. So, Lord Krishna is, here Prabhupada is writing in the purport, he is talking about the material engagement, which is what I have drawn here. This loop which keeps us in the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death, which is ignorance, avidya, leading to papam or sinful life, and sinful life leading to, again coming back to the material life. We will explain more of this in a later chapter. Or when we do Nectar of Devotion, we will get into deeper things about Bijam, Kutam and all that. We will not do it now. Just understand at a high level that this is a cycle. Ignorance means what? Ignorance of what? Ignorance of who we are and what is our relationship with God. That is this ignorance. We think that we are the body, and the goal of life is to enjoy the fruits of our activities. And that is what is called as ignorance. As long as we do that, we will get bound by sinful life, and therefore we have to eternally come back into this material world to rot in the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. Human life is the only opportunity that offers where we can question this and get out of the cycle of birth, this is old age and death. This is a rare opportunity, one human lifetime. So better give it to Krishna. Don't engage in the same activities which animals are also doing. Ahara Nidra, Gaya Maithunam, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Everybody is doing that. Nobody is interested thinking about how to get out of the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. So, the role of Vedas is explained in this particular verses, in 31 and 32. What is the role of the Vedas? The Vedas gives us a chance to escape this cycle by talking about four subject matters. What are the four subject matters of the Vedas?
Dharma,
Artha, Kama and Moksha. Now you may say, how does the Vedas help us escape the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death by talking about Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha? How does it work? That is explained in these sections. Dharma gives what?
Knowledge.
Artha. Dharma gives? Artha. How do we know that Dharma gives Artha? Yes, it also gives knowledge. But first it gives Artha. Dharma gives Artha. How? All of you heard also, no? Many people who had come to, you know, the Epping Bhagavat Sapta. What's his name?
Nanda Kishore
Prabhu. Nanda Kishore Prabhu was also mentioning this point. Dharma gives Artha. Religion gives what? Economic development. Religion gives economic development. How religion gives economic development? How? What has got religion to do with economic development? Economic development comes from the corporate offices. It comes from using the state-of-the-art software. Suppose someone argues like that. How will you counter that argument? No! Economic development doesn't come by management policies. Neither does it come by use of state-of-the-art software. How will you argue? Again, simple example. A company is dealing with apples. It is establishing a nice supply chain model for how to supply apples. Right? But where does the apple come from?
Tree.
From tree. Where does the tree come from? Huh? Earth. Where does the earth come from? Beyond that, the scientists cannot answer. Correct? Where does oxygen come from? Scientists cannot answer. How Lord has packed an entire banyan tree inside a small seed? Scientists cannot answer. And we are expecting that science, which can't answer any of the basic questions of life, is very advanced science. Think about it. Right? So the Vedas give a very simple answer. They say, Annat bhavati bhutani parjanyad anna sambhava. We have seen that passage many times in our Bhakti Vriksha program. How food grains come? Because the earth, Lord has already made some part of the earth as fertile land. Lord Krishna has arranged for rains to pour on that fertile land. Someone has sowed already the seed inside that fertile land. When did the first seed come? Seed come from apple. Apple come from seed. When did the first one come? Chicken came first or egg came first? Something has to come first, no? At the end of the day. So if you go back, then you will understand that when Lord Krishna says, when you follow religion, when you do yajnas, there will be rainfall. When there is abundant rainfall, there will be no scarcity of natural products and vegetables and fruits and food grains. There is no scarcity. When there is no scarcity, we don't have to work like donkeys in the office to be able to afford those products. As we said, going forward, Apple products like iPod, etc. are going to become more
cheaper.
But Apple is going to become more expensive. We can afford iPod, but we cannot afford to eat apples every day. Correct? Why? Because there is no scarcity of iPods in the market. But there is scarcity of genuine apples in the market. Sometimes you taste the apple, you're thinking, is it apple or what? There is no taste. Correct? So that is what is getting scarce. And people are thinking we are progressing in life. This is nonsense. We are actually going back. Kali Yuga is going to get worse and worse. So, by following the process of dharma, by doing yajna, then there will be abundance, no scarcity. So, there will be automatically economic development. Okay, so from dharma comes artha. But what happens? When artha comes, what happens? When everything is very nicely abundant, then first class we want to eat. We want to eat apples, fruit, badam, pishta, everything, milk. First class we want to eat. And then what happens? When you eat, then what do you want after that? When the belly is heavy, then the genitals start wanting something, right? So, what happens? Artha leads to?
Kaam.
When we have jarurat se jyada paisa, then we will do lot of wonderful bedroom. And when bedroom is wonderful, then what desire will come in the heart? Isn't it? So what will happen? From dharma you get artha. Because of money, you see many times, just because of money, some people start doing all kinds of nonsense activities in their life. Just because they have money. Right? So that is the tendency of a human being. When everything is very comfortable, when there is no problem, then the mind goes towards sex desire. So dharma leads to artha, artha leads to kaam. Now what happens? See the beauty now. Now I have done dharma, I have got all the earth, first class I am enjoying now in my life. First class, 10 bedroom kitchen. Every day different bedroom. Enjoy. Till when you can? Till when? Till when? Only till the body cooperates. When the body starts losing, body cannot cooperate, with all the money in the world, we cannot enjoy. One cannot enjoy sex. One cannot even enjoy a mango. One can afford mangoes, but one cannot eat mangoes. Why? Because there is diabetes. This is the truth of life. So the body deteriorates and dwindles. So dharma artha leads to kaam, but kaam cannot be enjoyed because the body does not permit you to do that kaam, despite all the artha that you have in your life. Therefore, what happens? You say, oh my God, is there any way that I don't get this body again? And then you start looking at moksha, liberation. This whole cycle is there, a karma goes through. But a devotee doesn't go through this cycle. So the Vedas is for the people who are slow. You slowly understand, you go through this process, eventually you will come to bhakti only after all this research and research methodology. Right? Whereas a devotee straight away hears this and takes to the process. So that cycle is given here. We'll just finish in 5 minutes. Okay. Also in these verses, dharma prescribes different types of sacrifices based on the modes of material nature. Sacrifices are different sacrifices based on the different modes of material nature. So there are sacrifice of breath control, which are mentioned. There is sacrifice through yajna. There is sacrifice through sharing material wealth. So many different types of sacrifice, you can read it offline. Now, superficially these sacrifices appear different, but they are all born of various consciousness only. Ultimately, all of them lead to transcendental knowledge. So the theme for today is sacrifice leads to transcendental knowledge. So, whereas Prabhupada, after writing all this in the purports, after all this Vedas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, this slow cycle of realization of the absolute truth, Prabhupada says that life of Krishna consciousness gives the transcendental knowledge immediately. From day one, we get this transcendental knowledge in Krishna consciousness. How does that work from day one? Now many of you who have been part of the Bhakti Vriksha program, did you not get the knowledge from day one? Transcendental knowledge. We got from day one, right? That knowledge. We might have got in a sequence of programs. Yes. But right from day one, we didn't say that, okay, let's all follow religion. Let's all follow, now graduate to artha. Now let us all do kama. Now let us all proceed toward liberation. Did we have our programs like that? No, our programs was spot on how to get out of the material world right from day one. Right? So that transcendental knowledge was given right from day one in different stages. For example, first we understand what? We understand the eternality of existence. That is the first knowledge we understand. That we are not the body, we are the soul. And the soul is eternal. We understand that. Therefore we understand, but because we are eternal, a soul we must work for the long term and not the short term. Second, we understand the inevitable nature of birth, disease, old age and death. We are eternal, but we still can't control birth, disease, old age and death as long as we got this body. Right? We understand that. Third, we understand that human life is very rare. So all this is transcendental knowledge. Right? Fourth, we understand that happiness in this material world is temporary and relative. It is not absolute. We saw that also in our SSR class. Right? Then we understand that what is the happiness formula? Happiness is equal to what? Number of desires fulfilled divided by number of desires. Correct? If you put it in a mathematical formula, number of desires fulfilled divided by number of desires. The materialistic people, they attack the numerator. They try to fulfill their material desires, and the devotees attack the denominator. We try to
Control our material desires by channelizing it in Krishna's service. So this is an easier process where you don't have to work like a donkey, you know, to be able to afford more and more in this world. Simplify your life, be happy with what you have, and you'll be happy. Otherwise, if you want to go more and more, there is no end to it then. Right? So this is transcendental knowledge. We understand the happiness formula. We understand and realize the power of bhakti. All of us have realized that sitting in this room. The power of bhakti. Whoever is chanting, all of us have realized how it works. The power of bhakti in removing sins. The power of bhakti in removing the sinful desire from the heart. The power of bhakti in enabling us to develop good qualities. Right? We have all realized that by the process of chanting. The power of bhakti in cultivating detachment from material things. We have seen that work in our life. The power of bhakti in giving love for Lord Krishna. We have seen that. So, pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam susukam kartum agaya. Direct evidence by sense perception. Right? 9.2. Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells this. Right? And then, not only that, and then extending ourselves to society. Not only doing our sadhana, but going out and preaching. So, all these are symptoms of bhakti. All this we are anyway getting, this transcendental knowledge. Not only we keep the transcendental knowledge with us, but we also then go out and share it with the world. So that is the gist of verse 31 and 32. Right? Now the last verse for today. 33. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. So any sacrifice which is performed in the knowledge, which we said just now, so many things we discuss. Such a sacrifice is better than merely sacrificing your material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work end or culminate in transcendental knowledge. So the culmination of all sacrifice is in transcendental knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada in his purport writes, there are two divisions of sacrificial activities depending on the level of consciousness of the person. Two types of sacrifices he mentions. Karma Kanda, which is fruitive activities, and Jnana Kanda, which is knowledge in pursuance of the absolute truth. Two types of activities. And Prabhupada is concluding that sacrifice performed in knowledge lead one to higher goal, like that. Higher platforms of transcendental knowledge. Like that. So, in these verses, Lord Krishna, what the Lord is effectively telling Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra is, he is saying that he is concluding these discussions on sacrifices. The whole section of today was on sacrifices. So he is concluding the discussion of sacrifices in this set of verses, and then he is beginning his summary of the whole transcendental knowledge, because the transcendental knowledge topic was divided into four sections. Today we did the third section. So in the next section he is going to now summarize that transcendental knowledge. How? Lord Krishna is going to tell us, I have told you that transcendental knowledge is very important. I have told you that sacrifices will lead to this transcendental knowledge. But how do you cultivate this transcendental knowledge? Who do you have to approach to get this transcendental knowledge? He is going to explain that in the next section. So the homework for whoever is reading and coming is Bhagavad Gita 4.34 to 4.42. Many of you who have not even noted this, pretty sure that you may forget it. What was the verses?
34.
If you can't remember it, from wherever we left till the end of the chapter. So you don't have to note it. La Prabhupada.